mass radiative corrections, which cancel the existing ones. For example, as you know, in supersymmetry, we have like the top loops, which are cancelled by stop loops. But this stop loop can exist only because Suzy predicts the existence of a new operator in the Lagrangian, which is a stop-stop Higgs-Higgs operator. So a priori, we could look from signatures arising directly from this operator, for example, the decay of a heavy stop to a lighter stop and a Higgs boson. However, as you know, this signature is far from being the dominant signature that through which we can see supersymmetry. And actually, supersymmetry is looked for using a lot of different signatures. For example, stops are looked for example, using their decays to other quarks and electroweakinos. But these decays to other quarks and electroweakinos arise from an operator in the Lagrangian, which is generated because we have supersymmetry, but which is not required to have the cancellation of the quadratic divergences in the Higgs mass, because it is not this quartic stop-stop Higgs-Higgs operator. This operator is not necessarily required. I mean, it is required for Suzy, but
well, it's required because if you try to keep the stop light, but you cannot decouple the Guino, because if you decouple the Guino, this vertex will contribute to the raising the mass of the stop, which will in turn be to have it to second and Higgs. So there is a second order tuning in the system already.
Yeah, but this operator is not dealing with like the main operator that does the one loop cancellation. It is more specific to a given model. So the statement I made is like for Suzy, but we can make it more general by saying that all these models which enforce naturalness imply like are looked for using signatures that are not absolutely necessary for having the quadratic divergences cancelled. They can be necessary in the framework of a given model, but they are not necessary in itself because they don't they don't arise from the operators that could cancel the quadratic divergences, for example, the one loop quadratic divergences caused by the top quarks. So what we might wonder is actually, is there a way to make strong statements about the hierarchy problem, strong model-independent statements about the hierarchy problem? And finding such, and trying to make model-independent statements about the hierarchy problem is very challenging because it will imply studying the hierarchy problem at low energy, studying the low energy signatures of that a model must have to be natural. And it implies that we abandon the idea of making any assumption about what is the high energy mechanism that could cancel the Higgs quadratic divergences. So it means that we are going to have to ignore at the lowest order, for example, to stay at one loop and ignore what happens to other loop levels, since now we don't have a unifying principle and it's not tractable. And since we have no complete model, even if we observe one of these low energy signatures, this is not going to give us information about the underlying mechanisms that could cancel the quadratic divergences in the Higgs mass. And a priori, we won't even be able to know whether or not there is any fine tuning. However, such an effective theory approach can be extremely useful with the current experimental results. Because what happens right now is that we don't have any hint about what is the mechanism that could cancel the quadratic divergences in the Higgs mass. In fact, we don't even know whether or not there is such a mechanism, and the standard model might very well be fine-tuned. So here, an effective theory, a bottom-up approach, can be extremely useful because these low-energy signatures will be like necessary condition for a theory to be natural, independently of any model, independently of any high-energy mechanism. Yes?
That first statement is just not true. We cannot have a necessary condition because the high economy is by its nature a UV question. And so you could just, your UV is some complicated theory that zero for that particular thing.
I mean, you.
There is no particle interpretation of constant name one against the other.
It seems to me, I mean, when it's approached, for example, saying, I don't know, well, at most, amazingly, to me, it seems that what you can do is delay the hierarchy growing to higher.
Yes, what I mean is, but even if. Yes, but if you don't observe any signature, you might be able to state that there is some amount of fine-tuning, at least.
None observed, but it's a yielding question.
Yeah, but in this case, it would restrict it to like very specific classes of models, which are not Suzy, which are not Little Higgs, and which are not these models, so it would be...
You calculate the intermass from the UCAL
Yeah, you get the logarithmic divergences too.
And you need to exclude any mass too.
Yes, but the quadratic divergences are for the moment like the dominant problem because they are the biggest ones. So here we're trying to find like signatures which allow these divergences to be cancelled in priority. But I agree we should like take care of the logarithmic divergences too later.
The LSC sees nothing new, supposedly.
Yeah.
And if this continues, if I fantasize that it's all the way to the point, then you can solve the naturalist problem. Because the, you have the log, there's an m squared times the log. So any larger m is going to cause a severe problem.
Okay.
Well, where are the real numbers? Empirically, we're not anywhere above 3 dB. I'm sympathizing with your program, I'm just not agreeing with your definition of what you call naturalism. If you want to define your program as I want to find physics that cancels quadratic divergences in a more different way, that's fine.
Okay.
But I don't think it's right, correct to say that this is necessary condition for naturalism.
Okay, so yeah, there might be, I might have been like too far in defining naturalness as cancellation of one-loop quadratic divergences. But okay, yeah, we can see like here naturalness is defined in a more restricted way. It's, look, it's cancellation. But yeah, I agree, there are other approaches. So what we can say is that if none of these low-energy signatures of one-loop cancellation are observed, it means that either we have some amount of fine-tuning or we have natural theories which don't involve a new particle running, new particles running in loops, which is already like a big restriction. But so these signatures are going, so since they are low energy, no assumption is required on the UV, like high energy, on the UV mechanism. So we're able to have an exhaustive, like model independent study of these necessary conditions for loop cancellation. Then even in the case where like one of these low energy signatures is observed, it will give us hints for which top-down approach is a good approach to pursue, or which top-down approaches, actually. There will be many of them. And it will give us a hint, at least, that the Higgs path is protected by some mechanism. Also, there is like still no formal proof. And finally, getting, like finding all the possible high-energy mechanisms that could protect the Higgs path and give a natural theory is like extremely difficult. It doesn't seem to be able to be exhaustive about, like, and listing all the possibilities on this side. However, finding the low energy signatures of loop quadratic divergences cancellation, if we stay like at the level of one loop, for example, is a much easier task because now it is possible to be exhaustive. For example, we can try to find what are the possible operators in the Lagrangian which cancel the quadratic divergences in the Higgs mass at one loop. And in fact, there are only two of them. One of them is a Yukawa type operator. So here I'm using the Suzy notation to make things clearer. And the second one is a quartic term. For example, the stop loop in supersymmetry. So now that we have these two operators, we can find like all like minimal signatures associated to the cancellation of the Higgs quadratic divergences at one loop, at least, by finding by minimally extending the standard model Lagrangian with each of these operators separately. So that leaves us with two minimal models. For each of these minimal models, we can find all the possible like psi 1, psi 2, or psi using gauge invariance. And so for each model, for each minimal model and for each set of quantum numbers, we can look for all the associated signatures. But the signatures that interest us are the signatures which vanish when the couplings associated to these operators vanish. So these are signatures which are tightly bound to the cancellation of the quadratic divergences. So is there any question before I continue? Okay, so let's start with the first operator, so the trilinear term. So this trilinear term is associated to a limited number of possibilities. First, in order to have a quadratically divergent contribution to the Higgs mass associated to this operator, psi 1 and psi 2 have to be fermions. So the contribution associated to this operator, to the Higgs mass, is going to be always negative because of the fermion loop. And so this kind of operator can cancel only the quadratic divergences associated to gauge boson loops. Then let's move on to what quantum numbers psi 1 and psi 2 can take. Since the Higgs is an SU2 doublet, it means that either psi 1 or psi 2 has to be charged under at least SU2. So at least one of these particles has to have a standard model charge. And finally, we can explore two possibilities. One possibility is the case where both psi 1 and psi 2 are BSM particles, and the case where either psi 1 or psi 2 is a standard model particle. So let's explore the first case where both psi 1 and psi 2 are not standard model particles. So if we stay in this minimal extension where we add to the standard model Lagrangian this trilinear term only. In this case, we would have a Z2 symmetry, which means that either psi 1 or psi 2 is going to be stable. And in this case, the Suzy notation that I used in the Feynman diagrams takes all its sense, and we have a phenomenology which is very electrowicino-like. And in our minimal model, more precisely, we're going to have at least pair production through gauge bosons, and then decays to Higgs bosons and gauge bosons, which are of this form. The Higgs and gauge bosons, which are the decay products, can be accompanied by missing ET. This is the electrowicino-like phenomenology. But psi 1 and psi 2 can have other standard model charges, and therefore we could also have like a champ or a R hadron. So this case is very well covered by the existing LHC searches, since we can cover it using either electrowicino searches or champ searches or R hadron searches. Do you mean like this one?
Yeah.
So, what I mentioned was that it has a negative one-loop contribution. So this one can cancel the quadratic divergences due to gauge bosons only. So now let's consider the case where either psi 1 or psi 2 is a standard model particle. So for simplicity, let's take psi 1 being standard model. So in this case, due to gauge invariance, psi 2 has to have the same quantum numbers as a standard model particle. For example, if psi 1 is a right-handed uptype quark, psi 2 will have to have the same quantum number as a left-handed quark. And so in this case, what we are going to have is just a fourth generation of either quarks or leptons. So here, the minimal like production and decay modes associated to the new operator can be like pair production through gauge bosons. Now, associated production can be competitive in some cases. And we can have like decays to a standard model fermion and Higgs or gauge bosons. So here again, this case is well covered by LHC fourth generation searches. And a coupling measurement will help to see whether or not a quadratic divergence is cancelled. So is there any question about the trilinear term? Okay, so now I'm going to move on to...
It's not as simple as this, right? Because
Yes.
But you cannot do that because then the mass of psi 1, psi 2 would be too low. Right? So somehow you need to introduce some mass for psi 1, psi 2.
Yes. We need to introduce some new mechanism, I agree. But this study is like really a bottom-up study. So we try to explore all the possible cases without making some restrictive assumptions.
Well, I'm just saying that you're missing operators. You will include them in your study.
Yes, exactly. They should be included in a larger study. But yes, but since we try to be since we try to have signatures which are independent on these other degrees of freedom, we consider like this operator only for the production and decay modes. But I agree they can lead like to other signatures and more complicated phenomenology.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure entirely into the separation because so just understand the logic of what you want to do. You want to match Y to be started to accept the console every week.
Yes.
But this loop will depend on the mass of
nothing of
so the power movement will not, right? So, okay, and then you just fix Y to be whatever value you
want,
and then you use it for your production mechanism.
Yes, exactly. So for a more dedicated search, we'll have to go deeper. So let's now consider a minimal model where the standard model Lagrangian is extended with a quartic term. And this quartic term will be of the form some lambda quartic coupling times h dagger h psi dagger psi, where psi is a new particle. So this quartic term is associated now to a very large number of possibilities. So first, now psi can be either a scalar, like a stop, for example, or a vector like fermion. This is the case, for example, in Little Higgs model with fermionic top partners. And after symmetry breaking, we are going to have at least two interesting terms, which are like a trilinear term, h psi dagger psi, and a quartic term. And here I'm going to concentrate on four remarkable cases which could lead to some distinctive signatures. The first case is the case of a light particle psi, which could lead to alternate Higgs decay modes. Then the case where psi is a dark matter particle. Psi can also be a scalar and get a VEV. And finally, psi can be charged under the standard model. Also now, it is not required at all. So let me consider first the case of psi being a light particle. So if psi is lighter than half the Higgs mass, we are going to have Higgs alternate decay modes. And one of the most likely signatures that we are going to get are new Higgs invisible decay modes that are already covered by the ATLAS and CMS searches. But here what happens is that if we try to use such an operator to cancel quadratic divergences caused by top or gauge boson loops, we are going to have to need a large coupling lambda. And this coupling is going to be lead to a large Higgs to invisible branching ratio, which is going to be excluded by the current searches. So here, this operator cannot cancel the top or gauge divergences with a light particle psi. However, the possibility to cancel divergences caused by other particles like bottom quarks is still open because now the couplings are going to be very small. And so the sensitivity of these searches is far from being enough. So let's now consider the case of psi being a dark matter particle, which is quite an interesting case, actually. Since now, if we consider this quartic term alone, we are going to have direct and indirect detection signatures. Direct detection through the Higgs portal, spin independent, and indirect detection signatures through annihilation to pairs of Higgses or Ws or Zs. If we try to take this operator and have it cancel one type of quadratic divergence, like the one caused by top loops, the lambda coupling is fully determined. So we can already compute cross sections, annihilation cross sections, relic densities, and get exclusion bounds.
But you don't have a choice on that, right? That's what I don't understand. You have to choose this one to cancel the top.
Yeah. You could get some. I think you could get a gauge divergence with like fermions.
Well, so if you think about this quartic, the quartic, we agree that the trilinear piece cannot do that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want the quartic piece to cancel the Phong divergence,
yes,
it will do that if psi is a fermion.
Mm-hmm.
That means, well, either way,
I mean, it can do that if psi is a, if psi is a scalar too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But either way, that fixes the coupling, so you don't.
I mean, theoretically, you could see like the coupling is fully constrained if constrained to cancel the top divergence. But you could like have this operator cancel another another standard model particle loop.
Sure, but the top is the top is the elephant in the room, right? That's the fixing that you have to cancel.
Yes, but here we just want to remain like agnostic about what we want to cancel. But what happens here is that we are going to use this operator. Here we are going to do a case study where we use this operator to cancel like the top quadratic divergences, for example. And so here I agree that the coupling is fully constrained. I mean, it's just the coupling depends only on which quadratic divergence you want to cancel. That's it. It's So here, for example, if we cancel like the top quadratic divergence, which are the blue lines, we can compute the relict densities. So for example, for the top quadratic divergence, the blue, the solid line is for scalar dark matter, and the dashed line is for fermion dark matter. And here I agree that the coupling is fully constrained. We have only one value. So that allows us to get numerical values. And here we assume that psi makes up all the dark matter and that we need only one particle psi to cancel the top quadratic divergences. So this is restrictive hypothesis, but which allows us to get like nice numerical values and nice relic densities. And we see that under this hypothesis, we get like the annihilation cross section to be like too big. So particles annihilate too efficiently and we get, and we don't get the correct relic density. So if the dark matter also cancels the top quadratic divergences, we would need a non-thermal production mechanism. So let's now consider the indirect detection signatures to start getting the first extrusion bonds. So indirect detection signatures come from annihilations through the quartic terms that we get after symmetry breaking. And the most remarkable signatures we can get are from psi dagger psi to two Higgses, which decay to bottoms, and psi dagger psi to a pair of W's. So both of them decay to pions and then to photons. Actually, we find out that using this operator, there is no indirect detection signal for fermions due to parity constraints. However, for scalars, again, the indirect detection cross section that we find is fully determined and is a function of the top Yukawa coupling. So we can get bounds from the value of this cross section. So again, the blue line is for a cancellation of top quadratic divergences, and the black line is the Fermi bound. So here you can see that we take on the y-axis the large mass or low velocity annihilation cross section. And here you can see that for sub-TV particle, this mechanism cannot explain the cancellation of the quadratic divergences due to the top loops. However, this is not a formal exclusion of this mechanism, since we can still imagine that there is more than one particle which cancels the top quadratic divergence, and so we would have a smaller coupling needed. So let's consider now the yes. I think it does because as you can see here, you have this like whitey to the fourth. But if you but what happens is that you will need a smaller coupling to if you have several particles. So then when you take the coupling squared, for example, if you have two particles, you will have a 1/4.
Right. Okay.
And so when you add all the cross sections, it cannot catch up. So now let's move on to the direct detection signatures. So now you have, like, after symmetry breaking, you're interested in this trilinear term. So what happens is that you are going to have only, like, spin independent interaction with the nucleus. And now you are going to have signals for scalars and for fermions. Also for scalars, you are going to have stronger limits. So here, what happens is that you can see that you have limits for, like, scalar dark matter and for fermion dark matter. The black line is the xenon 100 bound on the direct detection cross-section, which is on the y-axis. And you can see here that now, for both fermion dark matter and scalar dark matter, if the new particle psi makes up all the dark matter and is alone, the case of like top loop cancellation is excluded again.
Well, no, but I think here you're not buying yourself as much as you could, because you saw from the relic abundance that you're far away from being the full dark matter.
Mm.
And yeah. Assuming that, so really the blue curve would be way below.
If it is, yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to mention in the next slide. But, okay, if you can also assume that there is, that in a non-minimal model, you could find, like, non-thermal mechanisms which could make up for the correct relic density and have, say, make up all the dark matter too, which is not possible in this case. But yes, this case is the most restrictive one. It doesn't mean that top cancellation through this mechanism is excluded in, like, all cases. So here, we see that if psi is dark matter, interacts with standard model only through the quartic term and cancels the quadratic divergences, we're going to have very interesting correlated direct and indirect detection signatures. If psi is a fermion, we're going to have a direct detection signature but no indirect detection signal. And if psi is a scalar, actually the ratio of direct over indirect detection cross-sections is going to have a value which is independent on which quadratic divergence to cancel and which is fully determined by standard model parameters. So if we have cancellation through this mechanism, admittedly we should have, like, several particles which make up for this cancellation or a subdominant component of dark matter, but there is a good chance that this correlative signal could be measurable at experiments like Fermi and xenon 100.
Yes.
Yeah.
In order to make dark matter particles fit the data, galaxies, clusters, don't they have to be stable?
Yes, but I mean there is no, and this if they interact with standard model only through this operator, I mean there is nothing like forbidding them to be stable a priori.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, this is just the direct consequence of that operator she wrote down. Yeah. Psi goes to minus psi, the symmetry of two.
So these particles would fit the galaxy efficiently.
I think this is the list of the problem.
Well, no, it's the problem.
No, I mean, they can be stable.
Not with the data, you know, you can't.
It's stable, but the physics is awful.
The dark matter comes from the problem of galaxies and clusters.
Yeah, no, we agree that it should be stable for this, for any of this to be relevant. And with the Lagrangian,
so
wrote it down,
and
it's stable.
This too?
Yes.
Okay. So you have this stable particle.
Yeah.
Except for the particle, the electron, this proton is stable. Everything else is unstable. This is a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you expect?
And here, okay, we should, like, this operator, this minimal model should be embedded in a bigger model. But we could imagine some mechanisms that require it to be stable. It is just that here we want to find like all the possibilities. And then if we observe, for example, a correlated direct or indirect detection signature that corresponds to such an operator, we can like start worrying about why the particle is stable, what constrains it to be stable. But here it's just a matter of going over all the possibilities for the properties of psi.
So you're solving the natural problem by oscillating dark matter particles, which is stable. Mm-hmm.
Yes, but here our purpose is less solving the naturalness problem than finding like all the possible paths we could take. So we are like standing at the beginning of the path, and if there are some hints that it is the right one, then people can start like justifying it. It's more a matter of like seeing if we could see something. So is there any further question? So let me continue with the case where the particle psi is a scalar and gets a VEV. So in this case, we are going to have three important terms after symmetry breaking. One term is an important term which is mass mixing with the Higgs. Then we can have, if psi is heavy enough, decays to two Higgses or gauge bosons through this term, which is a trilinear term. And finally, we can also have like Higgs decays, but this last term has already been studied. It's the case of a light psi, so I'm not going to go back to it. And finally, if psi is a scalar and gets a VEV, there are two possibilities. Psi could be another SU2 doublet, or psi could be a standard model singlet. If psi is an SU2 doublet, what we have is basically a second Higgs. We have a two Higgs doublet model, so I'm not going to go into details about the phenomenology of the two Higgs doublet models here. And I'm going to concentrate on the case where psi is a singlet. So if psi is a singlet, because of the mixing with the Higgs, what we are going to see is a suppression of all the Higgs coupling. And this suppression will be by the same factor, whatever the Higgs coupling is. And it will be a factor of cosine alpha, alpha being the mixing angle. So here what we can do is look at the limits on the Higgs coupling in like ATLAS or CMS in the kappa F kappa V plane and draw bounds on the mixing angle. So here we used like the ATLAS bounds. And if we want to be like overly conservative using these bounds, we can draw already a limit of cosine alpha greater than about 0.93. Another way to get bounds on the mixing angle would be to study the following trilinear term, psi h stagger h. And if psi is heavy, this term could induce new decay modes. So for example, let's place ourselves in the large M psi limit, where the branching ratio to h, h, cz, and ww are fully determined by the Goldstone boson equivalence theorem. So here we can consider psi as being like a heavy Higgs, which is accessible by the usual Higgs searches. And here the most sensitive channel would be the Higgs to ZZ to 4 leptons. And here we are lucky because the standard model branching ratio of standard model Higgs to ZZ in the large mass limit is about equal to the branching ratio we have here. So the bounds associated to this search can be directly translated into bounds on sine squared alpha. Alpha being again the mixing angle. So here what we can see is that in the best case, the bounds that we are going to get are about like sine squared alpha less than 10%, but most of the case, these bounds are much looser, around like 20% or so. So to recapitulate what happens when we have like a new quartic operator with a scalar singlet with a VEV. The mass mixing induces uniform suppression of the Higgs coupling. So if we use the ATLAS bounds, we can get this lower bound for cosine alpha. We could also get bounds from psi decays if psi is heavy, but these bounds are not better than this one, except for extremely specific masses. So the best way to probe such a mechanism seems to be through Higgs precision coupling measurements. So here I haven't used the fact that this operator could cancel quadratic divergences from the top loops. If I use this fact and I do a very rough back of the envelope study of what the lower bound on the VEV should be, I find actually a pretty tight lower bound, which is around like TV scale. So this case has been like pretty specific, as was the dark matter case. So let me study now a much more generic case, which is a case of a particle psi which is charged under the standard model and no other assumption. So here I can extend the minimal model with a new operator, which is a gauge interaction. So here I chose psi being a fermion, but it's just to write down the Lagrangian. It can also be a scalar. V is a standard model gauge boson, and the G as a gauge coupling and any standard model gauge group. So if I combine this operator with the trilinear term that we get after symmetry breaking from the quartic, we actually get a minima in the most pessimistic case, at least a modification of the Higgs coupling to gauge bosons at one loop. So here there are several cases. If psi is just colored, we are going to have modification of the Higgs coupling to gluons, which is going to be extremely hard to measure in current experiments. We could, if psi is not electrically charged, not colored, but charged under SU2, we could like observe modification of the Higgs like branching ratio to WW or ZZ. But again, this is going to be very hard to reach at the LHC. And finally, the most optimistic case could be the case where psi is electrically charged. And in this case, we would have a modification of the Higgs decay rate to 2 photons. So let's do a more like quantitative evaluation of what happens in this case. So in this case, if we require cancellation of the top quadratic divergences, we can use the low energy theorem to determine what is the modification of the Higgs to diphoton decay rate for a particle of charge Q. If we choose Q equals one, unit of charge, we can actually get the fractional change of the Higgs to diphoton rate compared to the standard model. And we see that beyond 600 GeV, the fractional modification is less than 10%. So we, even with high luminosity LHC, we could hope reaching like particles up to like about 600 GeV, but probably not more. So to summarize what happens when we extend the standard model Lagrangian with a quartic term that could cancel the top quadratic divergence, what happens is that if the new particle psi is light, we could have invisible Higgs decay, but in this case, the top quadratic divergence is excluded by the cancellation of the top quadratic divergence through this mechanism is excluded by the current ATLAS searches. Then we could have like psi being dark matter stabilized by some unknown mechanism. In this case, we would get correlated direct and indirect detection signatures, but most likely, psi would have to be like either like subdominant component of dark matter or would have not to be the only particle to cancel the top quadratic divergence. Then if psi is a scalar with a VEV, we could have like tight constraints on the VEV of psi through precision Higgs coupling measurements. And finally, the most generic and difficult case, if psi is charged under the standard model, we are going to have minimal signatures which are one loop contributions to Higgs to gauge bosons. And these modifications are most likely to be too small to observe with the current LHC searches. There is one case I didn't mention where the Higgs is in, where the psi has neither of these properties. This case could lead to a modification of the Higgs wave function renormalization, which could be measurable at the ILC. This has been like the subject of a paper by Nathaniel Craig et al. So here, what are the current prospects for this quartic term? The current prospects are rather gloom because also we could have like strong constraint for the top quadratic divergence and signals which could be right around the corner. These constraints occur only for very specific cases. For example, the case of a dark matter particle canceling the top quadratic divergence. But in the most generic cases, we are going to need precision Higgs measurements to like very high sensitivity. And these precision Higgs measurements cannot be made with the current experiments. So now what we might wonder is there some simple extension of the minimal model that we're studying, which could lead to signatures which can be observed in the LHC? So in order to answer this question, let's consider again which model we're studying right now. What we're studying right now is a model where the Lagrangian is standard model plus this quartic term. So now what we want is adding an additional or several additional terms to the Lagrangian. But these additional terms will have to obey like some very specific and restrictive condition. First, we want these terms to be IR effects. So we don't want to make any assumption about CUV physics. Otherwise, we would be back to where we came from with a new like model solving the hierarchy problem. Then these models, these terms have to be useful for us. That is to say, they have to lead to new signatures which could be visible in the LHC. So to new decay modes for the particle psi, for example. And finally, these new terms, the signatures given by these new terms will have to be tightly bound to this operator, so to the quadratic divergence cancellation. That is to say that they will have to vanish when the coupling lambda goes to zero. And actually, there is only one possible term which obeys all these conditions. And this term is a mass mixing term. So here, if there is a fermion, you can write it that way, for example, with another particle that I call psi nu. And in diagrammatic notation, combining this term with the quartic terms that I had before gives something like this. So now we're going to have a term of the form psi psi nu h dagger h, which is much more tractable for like getting LHC signatures, for example. So what can be psi nu? Psi nu can be a Higgs boson. In this case, we would have two Higgs doublet model again. Psi nu can be a new particle. In our minimal model, it would be stable. And then it would lead to signatures with missing ET charms or R hadrons, which are very similar to the ones associated to the trilinear operators that I studied first. And finally, psi can be a standard model fermion. So more formally, what happens when we introduce a mass mixing term? When we introduce a mass mixing term, after going to the mass basis, we get two quartic terms. This term is the one responsible for the actual cancellation of the quadratic divergence. And this is a term which is very hard to see. But this second term is like arises directly from the existence, like is tightly bound to the existence of this term and could lead to visible signatures. I must say that now we would have only indirect evidence for the existence of this quartic term, since we can always imagine like cases where lambda 2 is non-zero, but lambda 1 is zero. However, getting lambda 2, we already give us strong hints that lambda 1 is non-zero. So this, like this new term, this lambda 2 term, could give rise to like free body decays if psi is heavy, so to psi nu and pairs of Higgs or gauge bosons, and could give rise to only one two-body decay mode, which is decay to psi nu and h. So there is going to be no two-body decay mode to involving gauge bosons. So this is going to give a very characteristic signature. This model is actually not that much of a monster, and we can find like similar result in the framework of actually the Little Higgs model. In Little Higgs model, you have a fermionic top partner which can cancel the top quadratic divergences, and the terms in the Lagrangian that we are interested in are of that form. So here we see our nice quartic term. So if we go in the mass basis, we see that we get two quartic terms, the one which cancels the quadratic divergence, and a new quartic term of the form top partner Higgs Higgs. And this quartic term is there only because there is both this term and the mass mixing term. However, the Little Higgs models have not really been studied that way before, because there is an important challenge, which is that they also have a trilinear term. And this trilinear term is going to have two-body decay modes, which are generally going to dominate over the two-body decays induced by this term. However, there is a region of parameter space in Little Higgs model where actually the trilinear term is subdominant. This region is for parameters obeying this condition, so for relatively large quartic and moderate empty. I must also mention that this quartic term could lead to flavor issues, so it is not unreasonable to imagine some models in which it could be made subdominant. And actually, in this Little Higgs model, if we consider only decays from the quartic terms, the main decay modes of the top partner, the main branching ratios associated to decays of the top partners, are like these ones, as you can see, two and three body decays. And so for reasonable top partner masses, we can assume that the top decays entirely to a top and a Higgs boson. So this is an extremely characteristic signature. So in what follows, I'm going to present more quantitative results where I move a little bit away from little Higgs and where I study partners of standard model fermions, which are not necessarily the top quark. So here I reconsider, I consider like this term arising from the quartic term. I consider only the two body decays because three body decays are subdominant. And I'm going to use the current LHC searches to derive bounds, exclusion bounds for partners of a top quark, a light flavor quark taken to be like an up quark partner, and an electron or muon partner. So the case of a top quark partner is really easy because there is already a dedicated search, and this dedicated search gives exclusion bounds in function of the top partner branching ratios. And here, actually, the case of a top partner decaying entirely to a top quark and a Higgs boson is the most constraining hypothesis and gives the following bounds. So the top partners have to be heavier than about 850 GeV. So we are dangerously close to the TeV scale. The case of, it's not a light quark partner, it's the partner of a light quark. The case of the partner of a light quark is more complicated since there is no dedicated search for this partner decaying to a quark and a Higgs boson. So here, what we're going to have is a Higgs-Higgs-Jet-Jet final state. And if we consider the searches which don't have like specific requirement on the two jets, like rapidity gap, if we don't consider the searches which have a jet veto, if we don't consider the searches which have very loose exclusion bounds, what we are left is the Higgs to gamma-gamma search, which keeps actually a pretty loose bound on the mass of the quark partner, which is of about 300 GeV. So these bounds is very likely to be made much tighter by dedicated search, using a dedicated search. Yes?
Why is it that test for new particles is H, standard H poles are decaying into two full tops? It goes through a top triangle, W plus W minus. So if you combine all the present data,
Have I looked at what?
If you put in new particles.
Yes.
Into the calculation of Higgs. You have to worry about new formulas, new vector formulas. So it's quite sensitive to having new particles.
Okay, I see. So is your question something like, as there is this new quark, so it is going to run in loops and modify the Higgs decay rate? So here what we're assuming is that, I showed like the fractional change associated to an electrically charged new particle to the Higgs to diphoton rate. And here we see that it's going to be of the order of like 30-50% if it runs in loop for this case. But here, what we have with this bound is here the exclusion bounds we have requires like a tremendous change in the cross section. And this change is much bigger than the one which is required by the fact that the up quark is going to run in loops.
Because the lattice itself, the two photons, is bigger than the standard law. This is produced a lot of papers. You see, a lattice result.
Yes, so yeah, here we are using the ATLAS result, which is a conservative estimate. If we use the CMS result, we are going to get much tighter bounds. But here it would be better like to redo this search later when we get more data in this Higgs to gamma-gamma channel. And when we see like whether or not there is still an excess. But here, yeah. We are getting like this loose bound because we are using ATLAS data where there is this huge excess.
Okay.
So now let's consider the case of a lepton partner. Here the signature is much more characteristic since we have like two leptons and two Higgses final state. So here the like best suited searches are the four lepton searches. And for example, we're going to use the Atlas four lepton search, which has like cuts which provide high efficiency for like most models. However, the problem is that the production cross-section for lepton partners is extremely low for like the mass range that we are studying. So here we don't have any exclusion bound yet. So we need to go to higher luminosity. So to summarize, the one-loop quadratic divergences in the Higgs mass could be cancelled by only like two types of operators in the Lagrangian. One operator is a Yukawa-type term, which gives rise to like electro-Wikino-like phenomenology, or which could be probed by searches for champs or R-hadrons. The quartic term is a bit more complicated to study. It could lead to correlated direct and indirect detection signatures in dark matter experiments, if we are lucky. But otherwise, it would require making very precision Higgs, very precise Higgs coupling measurements, which cannot be made with the current experiments. However, if we assume that the new particle involved in the quartic term mixes with a standard model fermion, we could have new decay modes which are visible in the LHC. And these are going to be very characteristic because we would have only one two-body decay mode to the SM fermion partner plus a Higgs. In the case of a top partner, the bonds are extremely strong. However, for like other partners, like quark partner, like light fairball quark partners, or lepton partners, we need to go either to higher luminosity or to have a dedicated search. So thank you very much.
So this is what we're interested in saying is I'll just take eight side side and I'll just add as many psi as I need and arrange a couple so that I can solve the one divergence. I guess I don't have to charge it, I certainly don't have to give a color and just several of them, like fake color.
Yeah.
And if I make it sound more neutral, then you're saying you're not real bound.
I'm saying what, sorry?
If psi is sound more neutral, then there are no bounds.
There are no current bounds, yeah.
Except if it's light enough to for the indicator.
Yes.
What would be the size of the coupling you need? So let's take side of the fermion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, we can take this off.